Batu Sahanao Bhunaktu Sahaviryankaravahai Tejasvinavadhitamastu Mavidvishavahai Om Shanti 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 Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
So, page 2, chapter 51, the deliverance of Muchakunda, chapter 52, no, did I say 51?
No, you didn't say 51.
Oh, okay. Then chapter 52, Rukmini's message to Lord Krishna, chapter 53, Krishna kidnaps Rukmini, chapter 54, the marriage of Krishna and Rukmini, and chapter 55, the history of Pradyumna. Chapter 51, the deliverance of Muchakunda. Pratigya. The pure Krishna conscious person is always free from all material qualities. 51 summarizes questions and answers. Prikamaras asked Sukadeva Goswami question 1020 of Srimad Bhagavatam. Who was that person, O Brahmana? To which family did he belong? And what were his powers? Why did that destroyer of the barbarian lie down to sleep in the cave, and whose son was he? Srila Sukadeva Goswami answers these questions after the first quarter of the chapter. Maharaj Muchakunda asks the Supreme Personality of Godhead questions 10:21 and 22 of Srimad Bhagavatam. Who are you who have come to this mountain cave in the forest, having walked on the thorny ground with feet as soft as lotus petals? O best among men, if you like, please truly describe your birth, activities, and lineage to us who are eager to hear. These questions are addressed in Srimad Bhagavatam, 10:50, 39-40. So then, finer detail in that, because otherwise up to now he hasn't been asking so many questions recently. So now, then with this, then it comes up that he's asking about who's Muchakunda, what is his special position, because otherwise, before everyone's basically been introduced, or it doesn't take much introduction. But suddenly, who is the person sleeping in this cave, and then when he wakes up, he burns it? You know, who is that? Right? That's not a common thing. Right? If that was a common thing, no one would wake anybody up. Right? You know, like that. Or they do it from the next room, right? You have a bucket of water hanging there, and then from the next room, pull the cord, and like that. And, you know. Yes. Adhyaya Prakashika. Either that or everything would be fireproof, right? This chapter describes how Lord Krishna caused Muchakunda to kill Kalayavana with his harsh glance. It also relates the conversation between Muchakunda and Lord Krishna. After placing his family members safely within the Dwarka fortress, Sri Krishna went out of Mathura. He appeared like the rising moon. Kalayavana saw that Krishna's brilliant effulgent body matched Narada's description of the Lord, and thus the Yavana knew he was the personality of Godhead. Seeing that the Lord carried no weapons, Kalayavana put his own weapons aside and ran towards him from behind, wanting to fight with him. Sri Krishna ran from the Yavana, staying just barely beyond the Ravana's grasp at every step, and eventually leading him a long distance towards a mountain cave. As Kalayavana ran, he hurled insults at the Lord, but he could not grasp him, since his stock of impious karma was not yet depleted. Sri Krishna entered the cave, whereupon Kalayavana followed after him and saw a man lying on the ground. Taking him for Sri Krishna, Kalayavana kicked him. The man had been sleeping for a very long time, and now, having been violently awakened, he looked around angrily in all directions and saw Kalayavana. The man stared harshly at him, igniting a fire in Kalayavana's body, and in a moment burning him to ashes. This extraordinary person was a son of mandatas named Muchakunda. He was devoted to Brahminical culture and always true to his vow. Previously, he had spent many long years helping to protect the demigods from the demons. When the demigods had eventually obtained Kartikeya as their protector, they allowed Muchakunda to retire. Offering him any boon other than liberation, which only Lord Vishnu can bestow, Muchakunda had chosen from the demigods the benediction of being covered by sleep. And thus, since he had been lying asleep within the cave. Upon Kalyavana's immolation, Sri Krishna showed himself to Muchakunda, who was struck with wonder at seeing Krishna's incomparable beauty, right? So Krishna couldn't wake him up. Otherwise, he would try to burn Krishna into ashes, which is not good. Definitely, Rupa Goswami does not recommend that in the 64 items of devotional service. And Kalyavana, because he was a Yavana, Krishna didn't want to deal with him. So therefore, then, Muchakunda killed him. So in this way, he took care of all this. Muchakunda asked Lord Krishna who he was and also explained to the Lord his own identity. Muchakunda said, after growing weary from remaining awake for a long time, I was enjoying my sleep here in this cave when some stranger disturbed me and suffering the reaction of his sins, was burnt to ashes. O Lord, O vanquisher of all enemies, it is my great fortune that I now have the vision of your beautiful form. Lord Sri Krishna then told Muchakunda who he was and offered him a boon. The wise Muchakunda, understanding the futility of material life, asked only that he might be allowed to take shelter of Lord Krishna's lotus feet. Pleased at his request, the Lord said to Muchakunda, my devotees are never enticed by material benedictions offered to them. Only non-devotees, namely yogis and speculative philosophers, are interested in material benedictions, having mundane desires in their hearts. My dear Muchakunda, you will have perpetual devotion for me. Now, always remaining surrendered to me, go perform penances to eradicate the sinful reactions incurred from the killing you had to do in your role as a warrior. In your next life, you will become a first-class brahmana and attain me. Thus the Lord offered Muchakunda his blessings. Shloka Anusharana. Muchakunda burns Kalyavana. 1 to 13, 14 to 21, the history of Muchakunda. 22 to 44, exchange between Krishna and Muchakunda. 45 to 57, Muchakunda pleases Krishna by his prayers. 58 to 63, Krishna gives Muchakunda benediction. Srila Sukadev Goswami said, Kalyavana saw the Lord come out from Mathura like the rising moon. The Lord was most beautiful to behold with his dark blue complexion and yellow silk garments. Upon his chest he bore the mark of Srivatsa and the Kustuba gem adorned his neck. His forearms were sturdy and long. He displayed his ever-joyful lotus-like face with eyes pink like lotuses. Beautifully effulgent cheeks, a pristine smile, and glittering shark-shaped earrings. The barbarian thought, this person must indeed be Vasudeva, since he possesses the characteristics Narad mentioned. He is marked with Srivatsa, he has four arms, his eyes are like lotuses, he wears a garland of forest flowers, and he is extremely handsome. He cannot be anyone else. Since he goes on foot and unarmed, I will fight him without weapons. Resolving thus, he ran after the Lord, who turned his back and ran away. Kalyavana hoped to catch Lord Krishna, though great mystic yogis cannot attain him. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna Book. Kalyavana followed him with a desire to capture him, but in spite of his swift running, he could not capture Krishna. Krishna cannot be captured even by great yogis traveling at the speed of mind. He can be captured only by those who follow the path of devotional service. And Kalyavana was not practiced in devotional service. The BBT purport states, although Kalyavana was seeing Lord Krishna with his own eyes, he could not adequately appreciate the beautiful Lord. Thus, instead of worshipping Krishna, he attacked him. Similarly, it is not uncommon for modern men to attack Krishna in the name of philosophy, quote-unquote law and order, and even religion. Just due to lack of piety enough to be able to appreciate the Lord and his personal feature. Srila Jiva Goswami elaborates. Kalyavana saw him coming out of the city, The word vi niskantam indicates he was certain that Krishna had come out. Sukadeva describes Krishna by seeing his real nature out of prema. This is not how Kalayavana saw him, since if he did, he could not have had enmity with him. Right? So, does that make sense? So, in here, you're seeing different visions, right? Here, then Sukadeva Goswami is explaining how he sees Krishna, how he saw him come out. Right? What's happening there. But Kalayavana didn't see that. He couldn't appreciate. Because if he did, why wouldn't he worship the Lord? Right? He just was looking for, okay, four arms, check. Okay, he's got a kastuba gen, this, that, check. You know, so, okay, this adds up to the Lord. So he didn't see the attractive feature of the Lord. Right? The Sukadeva Goswami is able to see. Does that make sense? But we, thinking of the pastime, we see it how Sukadeva Goswami sees, right? We don't have to see it like Kalyavana saw. Naham prakasha sarvasya yoga maya samavritaha. Being covered by my yoga maya, I am not visible at all to the fools. Bhagavad Gita 7:26. Just as a person fond of bitter foods does not appreciate sweet foods, demons see only a dull shadow of the real Krishna. Though they see Krishna, they do not really see him. Because Krishna appeared, according to Narada's description, with four long, thick arms. Because of distinguishing characteristics related by Narada, Kalayavana quickly understood that this was Krishna. He had eyes pink like a fresh lotus. According to Amar Kosh, Aruna means very pale red. His cheeks possessed beauty, Srimat. The suffix mat is used to suggest praise. He smiled because of pleasure, right? So Srimat means this, Shri is then it means this very beautiful, or that Srimat, then that it's so beautiful, it's praiseworthy, right? Or it's worthy of praise, the beauty is there. He smiled because of pleasure. His earrings and other ornaments as well sparkled. Kalayavana thought, this must be Vasudeva, it cannot be anyone else. Krishna was going at quite a fast pace in a playful manner. Out of pride, Kalayavana wanted to catch him. But because Krishna was difficult to catch even for yogis, Kalayavana would be a laughingstock. So he would even less be able to catch him. Because the yogis can move at the speed of mind, but Krishna's quicker than that. So he's moving and Krishna will just keep ahead of him. You know, just enough that he's inspired, he can catch him, but also enough that he can't catch them. Right? Because if he's too far ahead, you give up. Yes. Right? Yes. Like that. But so it's just enough that he's inspired that, yes, I can do this. But he never quite does do this. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued, appearing virtually within reach of Kalyavana's hands at every moment, Lord Hari led the king of the Yavanas far away to a mountain cave. While chasing the Lord, the Yavana cast insults at him, saying, you took birth in the Yadu dynasty. It is not proper for you to run away. But still, Kalayavana could not reach Lord Krishna because his sinful reactions had not been cleansed away. Right, so he's so impure, so he can't. Like that. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book. According to Vedic culture, anyone who does not follow the regulative principles observed by the higher castes, the Brahmins, Kshatriyas, and Vaishyas, or even those observed by the labor class, the Shudras, is called a Malecha or Yavana. The Vedic social situation is so planned that persons accepted as Shudras can gradually be elevated to the position of Brahmanas by the cultural advancement known as Samskara, or the purificatory process. The verdict of the Vedic scriptures is that no one becomes a Brahmana or a Malecha simply by birth, right? Because these are whether you choose to follow or not follow the Vedic culture. That's basically what it is. So Brahmins, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, Shudras, they follow the Vedic culture. Shudras may not follow so strictly, but the point is anything they do follow, they get benefit for. Does that make sense? So in other words, you do something wrong, there's a reaction for that, but they're not breaking any rule in their own duty. Does that make sense? So in other words, a Brahmin is supposed to do a certain thing. He doesn't do it, there's a reaction for that. Right? And then he does something wrong, he gets the reaction for what's done wrong. Does that make sense? But for a Shudra, there's no, they don't have that rule. So they're not breaking any rule by not following it. Right? Because there isn't one. Then, whatever action they do, that they'll get the good or bad result for. Does that make sense? So that's why it says there's no rules for them, specifically. Because there isn't something, there's, you know, just if you're interested in elevation and that, then you follow those paths. And if you don't, then they're there. It's a neutral state. But what they do wrong, they'll get a reaction for. Does that make sense? It's just they're not breaking any rule. You know, like Arjuna, he gave his word, and if he doesn't follow that, he breaks that rule. Does that make sense? Well, the shooter doesn't have that aspect. Does that make sense? So, but they will follow the general, generic kind of, you know, the customs and the social things within the Varnashram system. So because of that, then they're considered human. Right? Malecha Yavana means they are not following the Vedic version, or they're opposed to the Vedic version. That puts them in that category. So, you know, it's a recommended minimum when it works from the human platform. You accept the Vedic version and try to follow it the best you can. Does that make sense? Yes.
Can we say that the Shudras, they are supposed to assist the three?
They assist, that's an occupation, but what about an ashram?
It's not considered as a rule to assist.
That's there. I mean, that's an occupational rule. So they have that, but what I'm meaning is, the Brahman Kshatriya Vaishya has to get up in the Brahma Muhurta.
Oh, yes.
If the shooter gets up at 11 o'clock and, you know,
yes,
like that, there's no breakage of a rule. But he'll get the reaction for that late.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? You know, you get up like that, you'll be in the mode of ignorance.
Mm.
Like that. So that they'll get. But they're not breaking a rule by not getting up in the Brahma Muhurta.
Yes.
But the Dvijas, they are.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the whole thing, is that you want to say, I'm a Brahmin, then you have to follow the rules. And if you don't want to follow the rules, then don't claim you're a Brahmin.
Yes.
You know, like that. So it works out. By birth, everyone is accepted as a Shudra. One has to elevate himself by the purificatory processes to the stage of Brahminical life. If he doesn't, if he degrades himself further, then he is then called a Malecha or Yavana. Right? So if he just stays there, he doesn't improve himself, but he doesn't degrade himself, then he's a Shudra. If he improves himself, then he goes up into the others. And if he degrades himself, then he goes down into Malechas and Yavanas. Kala Yavana belonged to the class of Malechas and Yavanas. Contaminated by sinful activities, he could not approach Krishna. The principles from which higher class men are restricted, namely illicit sexual indulgence, meat eating, gambling, and intoxication, are an integral part of the lives of the Mlechas and Yavanas. It's like without that they don't have, means basically speaking, let's say you're having a party or a program or anything, right? What is the essential item that must be there? There must be alcohol, right? Whether it's vegetarian or not, but I mean, otherwise, then it would be all that, you know, kind of stuff. And the men and women mix freely, flirt, this, that, so many, it's all part of, it's just, otherwise it's not a party. You understand? So that's the things they have to do. There's no question of it.
And smoking.
Smoking, yes, they have to smoke. They have, it just has to happen. Otherwise, it's not a party. It's just day-to-day life. Right? Great. They're an integral part. Being bound by such sinful activities, one cannot make any advancement in God realization. The Bhagavad Gita confirms that only one who is completely freed from all sinful reactions can engage in devotional service or Krishna consciousness. Where is this one? Oh, up there. Oh, okay, because it looked like another quotation mark. Okay. Okay, so then here, just on Kali Yavana saying, you took birth in the Yadu dynasty, it's not proper for you to run away. Footnote 1. The BBT purport states, the Lord exhibits here his opulence of renunciation. To determine to execute his plan and give his blessings to Muchukunda, the Lord ignored Kali Yavana's insults and calmly proceeded with his program. The Lord similarly ignored Hiranyaksha's insults while protecting the earth. Right? When he's picking up the earth, Hiranyaksha is making all kinds of comments, but he just didn't care. So that's his aspect of renunciation. Right? Means, you know, naturally we'll say, oh, it's a weakness, it's a this, it's a that, just because we can't do it. Right? As soon as we hear, we get angry. And so if you're not getting angry, that's because you're weak. They don't understand that actually he's not getting angry because he was actually strong. He just didn't care. He just renounced. He just lets it go. We can't let it go. Does that make sense? Yeah. Jiva Goswami explains. Seeing he could not catch Krishna, Kalyavana began scolding him in order to stop him, because he thought by that he'd stop and fight. Since Krishna was famous among the Yadavs for his courage, he should not flee. Scolding him, he followed him, but could not catch him at all. The reason is ahata shubha. Literally, he had not destroyed his sins. Since his sins were eradicated by suddenly seeing the Lord, presence of sin cannot be the cause of his attaining the Lord. One could propose that if Kaliyavana's auspiciousness were unimpeded, he would have caught his enemy. However, he could not catch Krishna because of inimical mentality and actions. One should not lament that Kaliyavana did not get liberation, since he did not attain liberation later. Right? Because he was killed by Mochakunda, not by Krishna. So, by seeing Krishna, he was freed of all sins, but he didn't change his mentality. He was still inimical. Therefore, that itself is a sinful mentality, so he could not attain the Lord. Does that make sense? And in continuance with this, then, you know, he didn't, after his death, he didn't attain liberation. He'd get purified, but he... However, just with the destruction of their sins, demons do not attain the Lord. So, quoting from Srimad Bhagavatam, the demons headed by Pralamba, Danuka, Baka, Keshi, Arista, and the wrestlers, Kuvalayapida, Kamsha, Kalayavana, Dravida, Pandarka, Shalva, Narakasura, Balvala, Dantavakra, the seven bulls, Shambara, Vidurata, and Rukmi, as well as those with bow in hand, glorious in fighting on the battlefield, such as the Kambojas, Matsyas, Kurus, Srishjayas, Srinjayas, and Kaikayas will attain Sayuja or Vaikunta by the Lord or through his instruments, Balaram, Arjuna, Bhima, and others. Oh, no, one should not lament he did not get liberation, since he did attain liberation later. How did I get did not? Okay, so the destruction of the sins is not, there has to be that attraction to the Lord. Now he's seen the Lord, then he's killed. So now in that purified state, then seeing the Lord, then from that liberated position, then he would then be able to appreciate the Lord. From there they could move forward to Vaikuntha. The Lord cannot be attained by any ordinary means. Swayam Bhagavan Krishna, whose foot dust cannot be seen by yogis and samadhi, who have controlled their mind by severe hardship for many births, is eternally situated here, directly visible to the eyes of the people of Braja. Ah, how can the good fortune of the people of Braja be described? Srimad Bhagavatam 10.12.12. This special means is indicated for attaining the Lord. Only by bhakti, with full faith, can the devotees attain me, Paramatma, the object of love. Bhakti fixed in me purifies even a dog eater of his low birth. Srimad Bhagavatam 11.14.21. Some of the cowherd boys, who were all great souls, could then massage his lotus feet, and others qualified by being freed from all sin would expertly fan the Supreme Lord. Again, some of the cowherd boys, who were all great souls, would then massage his lotus feet, and others, qualified by being free of all sin, would expertly fan the Supreme Lord. That was better. Srimad Bhagavatam 10.15.7. In the verse above, hatapapmanaha refers to the highest bhakti, devoid, completely of indifferent or hostile attitude towards the Lord. Right? So, Kalyavana had that hostile attitude. Right? Thus, in the verse, the phrase Ahata Ashubhaha indicates his inimical attitude towards the Lord. How could he attain the Lord in the manner that Jashoda caught him as he ran away? Right? Because there's no affection, so he can't catch. Because that's the only way you can catch the Lord. Otherwise, he being the supreme, you know, no one can catch him.
Maharaj, where it mentions highest perfect devoid completely of this austerity towards the Lord.
Highest?
Highest bhakti devoid completely of indifferent or of hostile attitude towards the Lord. Why is it termed as bhakti in itself? If one is indifferent and hostile towards the Lord, showing bhakti in itself.
Meaning?
Why is it termed as bhakti?
It says highest bhakti. Completely devoid completely of indifferent or hostile attitude towards the Lord. Means it's pure devotional service.
It's pure devotional service.
Yeah, mixed devotional service, then you won't get this opportunity. So only pure devotional service will give that opportunity. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued, although insulted in this way, the Supreme Lord entered the mountain cave. Kalayavana also entered, and there he saw another man lying asleep. Srila Jiva Goswami explains, the Lord, omniscient, knew the power and bhakti of his devoted Muchakunda, who was sleeping in the cave. Krishna, the best of the intelligent, stood near the head of King Muchakunda without being visible. He did so to make room for Kalayavana and to hide himself. Kalayavana did not see the Lord, but someone else from Harivamsa. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued, so, after leading me such a long distance, now he is lying here like some saint. Thus thinking the sleeping man to be Lord Krishna, the deluded fool kicked him with all his strength. Right, so he ran for a long way, so now he's lying here like a saint. So, also, say in Bengali sometimes, the kid's making so much trouble and all that, and then the situation changes, and now they become very nice. You know, it's like they're giving you so much trouble, and then some you know, senior person walks in, or someone else walks in, now they're really nice. Yeah. So then you say, sadhu hoi geche, right? You mean, so now you become a sadhu, right? You know. So he's saying the same thing. Oh, now you become a sadhu, now just laying down and peacefully, not running. Oh, yeah. The man awoke after a long sleep and slowly opened his eyes. Footnote 2. Srila Jiva Goswami explains, while he was ruling in the Treta Yuga of the first cycle of yugas in Vaivasvata Manvantara, he went to help the devatas. After that, he had been sleeping till the present 28th cycle. He opened his eyes slowly because of being dizzy from suddenly being awakened by force, right? So he's been sleeping for 28 cycles of the yuga. Not bad. You know? That's like more than 100 million years. Right? That's a good nap. Right? You have to appreciate that.
This particular cave is near Badrinath.
This cave's near Badrinath?
Badrinath, yeah. Muchakunda.
Really?
Yeah.
So they went all the way up there.
Yeah.
Wow, impressive. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti. Oh, no, we already said that. He prayed for the boon of sleep because of the words of the ancient sage Garga. I will remain asleep without waking until Krishna appears.
Maharaj, we have skipped everything.
We have skipped everything?
Yeah. We are in Shubhari.
What have we skipped?
Looking all about. Verses
10. Oh, we're up at this footnote 2. Okay. Looking all about, he saw Kalayavana standing beside him. The awakened man was angry and cast his glance at Kalayavana, whose body burst into flames. In a single moment, O King Parikit, Kalayavana was burnt to ashes. So it wasn't one of these kind of slow ones when you get the agonizing face and like that. We're not talking that. Just oof, gone. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments. So that wouldn't go down in Hollywood, but this is the reality. By the angry glance of Mukunda,
Muchakunda.
Muchakunda, okay. You have to change that. Kaliyabana's body caught on fire. And then that fire generated from Kaliyabana's own body burned him up and turned him into ashes. This was because of the boon prayed for and received by Muchakunda. This is mentioned in the Harivamsa. Muchakunda repeatedly said, O Devatas, may that person who wakes me from sleep be burnt up by my eyes fiery with anger. He prayed for the boon of sleep because of the words of the ancient sage Garga. I will remain asleep without waking until Krishna appears. It is impossible for me, longing for the sight of Krishna, to remain awake for many cycles of four yugas. By sleeping, that time will pass in a few moments. He prayed for the boon of burning up the waker's body by his angry eyes to instill fear in Indra, who may try to wake him up to destroy more of Indra's enemies. Oh, okay. I was wondering, why would he want this boon? Just, okay, now that makes sense. Because then Indra might come and, you know, we have more work, right? This boon is granted as described in the Vishnu Purana. The Devata has said, he who wakes up Muchakunda from sleep will instantly burn to ashes by the fire from his body. Okay. King Parikit said, who is that person, O Brahmana? To which family did he belong? And what were his powers? Why did that destroyer of the barbarian lie down to sleep in the cave? And whose son was he? Verses 14 to 21. The history of Muchakunda. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued. Muchakunda was the name of this great personality, who was born in the Ikshvaku dynasty as the son of Mandata. He was devoted to Brahminical culture and always true to his vow in battle. Mandata, he was... You remember Mandata?
Yeah, he studied in Canto 9. Mandata. He studied in Canto 9.
And what did he do?
It's a footnote.
Footnote, okay.
Okay,
footnote 3. Srila Sanatana Goswami remarks, the son of Yuvanasva was Mandata, 19 generations after Ikshvaku. Mandata's son was the best among people, Mahan, because of being a devotee of the Lord. Puru Kutsham, Ambarisham, Muchakundam Chayoginam. These sons were Puru Kuksha, Ambarisha, and Muchakunda. Okay, so that's the famous. A great devotee. And Srimad Bhagavatam 9.6.38. Begged by Indra and the other demigods to help protect them when they were terrorized by the demons, Muchakunda defended them for a long time. Footnote 4. Srila Jiva Goswami remarks, he protected them for four yugas. When the demigods attained Kartikeya as their general, they told Muchakunda, O king, you may now give up your troublesome duty of guarding us. Abandoning an unopposed kingdom in the... Abandoning an unopposed kingdom in the world of men, O valiant one, you neglected all your personal desires while engaged in protecting us. The children, queens, relatives, ministers, advisors, and subjects who are your contemporaries are no longer alive. They've all been swept away by time. Inexhaustible time, stronger than the strong, is the supreme personality of Godhead himself. Like a herdsman moving his animals along, he moves mortal creatures as his pastime. BBT Purport states, the universe is created to gradually rectify the contaminated souls trying to exploit material nature. The Lord moves the conditioned souls along according to their karma through the various stages of spiritual rectification. Thus, the Lord is like a herdsman. The word Pashupala literally means protector of animals, who moves the creatures under his protection to various pastures and watering spots in order to protect them and sustain them. A further analogy is that of a doctor who moves the patient under his care to various areas of a hospital for diverse kinds of examination and treatment. Similarly, the Lord brings us through a network of material existence in a gradual cleansing process so that we may enjoy our eternal life of bliss and knowledge as his enlightened associates. Thus, all of Muchukunda's relatives, friends, and co-workers had long ago been swept away by the force of time, which, of course, is Krishna himself. Srila Jiva Goswami adds, time is called Bhagavan, since it is non-different from the Lord as his Shakti. This time is called the controller, Ishvara. It is never exhausted, Avyaya. It is a continuous flow without beginning or end. It leads Kalayante, all beings. What is its purpose? It is its play. This shows time's power. It is like a herdsman herding his animals. This shows time's independence. The demigods concluded, all good fortune for you. Now please choose a benediction from us, anything but liberation, since only the infallible Supreme Lord Vishnu can bestow that. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued, addressed thus, King Muchukunda took his respective leave of the demigods and went to a cave, where he lay down to enjoy the sleep they had granted him. Srila Jiva Goswami adds, he is called famous because of the following. What use are the devatas if only Vishnu can bestow the material world? I do not want to see others. I should sleep alone near Mathura, dear to the Lord, until I can see the Lord. Therefore, I will ask of the benediction of sleep. For this reason, his fame was spread everywhere. With permission granted by the devatas, he lay in the cave. This cave is well known. It is situated in a mountain of Dhavalapura, south of Mathura district.
That means there are two caves, Maharaj.
Okay, very good. So in other words, this is the cave he slept in. That other one is the cave, because after this he leaves and goes to the Himalayas. It is situated in a mountain. Okay. In Varaha Purana, in describing Parikrama of Mathura, is said to be situated within Mathura. There is a temple made to resemble a cave there, similar to the cave of Yashoda. Verses 22 to 44. Exchange between Krishna and Muchukunda. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued. After the Yavan was burnt to ashes, the Supreme Lord, chief of the Satvatas, revealed himself to the wise Muchukunda. Srila Prabhupada writes in the Krishna book, Krishna had actually entered the cave to deliver King Muchukunda because of his austerity, but Krishna did not appear before him first. He arranged that first Kalayavana should come before him. That is the way of the activities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He does one thing in such a way that many other purposes are served. He wanted to deliver King Muchukunda, who was sleeping in a cave, and at the same time he wanted to kill Kalayavana, who had attacked Mathura city. By this action he served all purposes. Srila Sanatana Goswami adds, the Supreme Lord, who is the best of the Yadus, revealed himself. This shows his affection for his devotees. He revealed himself to Muchukunda, who was fixed in bhakti. Just as Yavana had seen the Lord as Narayana, to Muchukunda he showed a similar form, corresponding to the description given by Garga. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued, right? Because remember, before the previous chapter, then it had mentioned about how Krishna reciprocates how you see him. Like that. So because Muchukunda is a devotee, then therefore he then appeared in that form so that he saw him in that could appreciate him in that devotional way. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued, as he gazed at the Lord, King Muchukunda saw that he was dark blue like a cloud, had four arms, wore a yellow silk garment. On his chest he bore the Srivat's mark, and on his neck the brilliantly glowing Kastuva gem. Adorned with a Vaijayanti mala, garland, the Lord displayed his handsome, peaceful face, which attracts the eyes of all mankind with his dark-shaped earrings, shark-shaped earrings, and affectionately smiling glance. The beauty of his youthful form was unexcelled, and he moved with the nobility of an angry lion. The highly intelligent king was overwhelmed by the Lord's effulgence, which showed him to be invincible. Expressing his uncertainty, Muchukunda hesitantly questioned Lord Krishna as follows. Srila Jiva Goswami comments, with his mind attracted to the great beauty of Krishna, Sukadeva again describes him. in order to praise the good fortune of Muchukunda. His chest especially shone with the brilliant Kustuba gem. This shows that it was superior to other ornaments. In the previous description, Krishna wore a lotus garland extending to his feet, Vanamala. Now he was shining with a Vaijayanti garland made of flowers of five colors. Because the other said it was a lotus garland, so he had that long lotus garland. So now he's wearing the Vaijayanti. According to the descriptions of Garga, like the Lord himself, all the ornaments had infinite forms. He had new youth, which was most beautiful. Conquered by Krishna's powers, he slowly began to inquire because he was most intelligent. Others cannot fool me by wearing the Lord's dress. Others lack the power to overwhelm me. This is how he thought. He first thought in various ways in order to dispel his doubts. He began to inquire slowly because it was hard to question the Lord. Because he was highly intelligent, he asked thoroughly. So here, highly intelligent means he had the character. Wasn't he was just smart? He had the character to back it up, because that's what's required in devotional service. Right? So that's why just being intelligent or being scholarly isn't enough. One has to have the devotional practice. So applying that knowledge that one learns, that's then how one becomes highly intelligent. Right? Mm. So in this way, then, he could inquire. Because he was highly intelligent, he asked thoroughly. By this, it is understood he had great devotion, like Prahlad. Footnote 5. Srila Sanatana Goswami points out, most of all, he thought he could relish the words of the Lord. Right? So if he asked a question, then he could hear the Lord speak, and then that nectar coming from the Lord's mouth, he would appreciate that very much. So you inquire, you could ask thoroughly. Thoroughly means it's not the volume of questions. Thoroughly means that the questions are exact and to the point. Right? That's thoroughly. Sri Muchukunda said, "Who are you who have come to this mountain cave in the forest, having walked on the thorny ground with feet as soft as lotus petals?" Footnote 6. Srila Jiva Goswami remarks, he asked the question in two verses. "You have come through the forest to a mountain cave hard to enter, after walking on ground profuse with thorns, with soft lotus feet." This indicates the Lord's affection for his devotee and his power. Right? That he could do that, and two, that he would do that. So it's his power and his affection. "Perhaps you are the potency of all potent beings, or perhaps you are the powerful god of fire, or the sun god, the moon god, the king of heaven, or the ruling demigod of some other planet." Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book. Muchukunda knew well that every higher planetary system has a predominating deity. He was not ignorant like modern men who think that this planet Earth is full of living entities and all others are vacant. The inquiry from Muchukunda about Krishna's being the predominating deity of a planet unknown to him is quite appropriate, because he was a pure devotee of the Lord. Lord King Muchukunda could immediately understand that Lord Krishna, who had appeared before him as such an opulent feature, could not be one of the predominating deities of the material planets. He must be the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, who has many Vishnu forms. Muchukunda therefore took him to be Purushottama, Lord Vishnu. He could also see that the dense darkness within the cave had been dissipated by the Lord's presence. Therefore, he could not be... Therefore, he could not be other than the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Muchukunda knew very well that wherever the Lord is personally present, by his transcendental name, qualities, form, and so on, there cannot be any darkness of ignorance. He is like a lamp placed in the darkness. He immediately illuminates a dark place. Srila Jiva Goswami comments, "Svit indicates conjecture. Perhaps he is the condensed personality of all effulgence. But this cannot be, because light is meager compared to his effulgence." Sridhar Swami says, "Tejas means a form of power or light." Tejas cannot refer to form of power or light. Tejas cannot refer to form. Vishva Prakasha says Tejas means strength, light, source of light, heroism, effulgence, or semen. There is a version with Tejo Murtihi or Tejo Murtaha. This is a portion of the element Tejas. Therefore, he is Vibhuti of the Lord, the God of the element Tejas. But the form here is greater than the God of Fire, which is much smaller, right? Because you may say, well, how can he say that? But remember, he was fighting for the demigods and interacting with them, so he would have seen them all. Right? Perhaps this form is the sun god, but the sun does not remove suffering and give bliss. Perhaps this form is the moon god, but it is also not the moon god. Because of its power, it must be Indra, but although Indra is king of the devatas, he does not reside everywhere. Perhaps this form is one of the deities of the directions. The word va indicates a side glance, doubt. Right, so all this comes up in his mind. Mm. But each time he concludes, no, it can't be. It must be the Lord. Right. Sri Muchukunda continued. Was he Sri Muchukunda over here? He was. Okay. I think you are the Supreme Personality of Godhead among the three chief gods. Since you drive away the darkness of the cave as a lamp dispels darkness with its light. Footnote 7. The BBT purport states, Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti points out that with his effulgence, Lord Krishna dispelled not only the darkness of the mountain cave, but also the darkness in Muchukunda's heart. In Sanskrit, the heart is sometimes metaphorically referred to as guha, cavern, a deep and secret place. O best among men, if you like, please truly describe your birth, activities, and lineage to us, who are eager to hear. Right, so that's why it was meaning that it was thorough. He went through and understand he must be the Supreme Lord. So then, if he could truly describe, about himself. Srila Sanatana Goswami comments, though he sees the forearm form directly, he also remembers that devatas should not touch the earth. Unable to determine that he is Vishnu, he calls to him, considering him to be a remarkable human. O best among men, because you are the best of humans, please describe at your discretion your birth. What can I do if you do not describe the birth because it is secret? Or tell what you want to do, karma. If you cannot do that, tell your family lineage and name, Gotram at least. That is, if you want to. This is uttered out of great politeness. Right? So he's looking, but he can't quite tell, because the Lord, it's only if the Lord reveals, then you can actually see. Yes. Because Kaliyavana saw the Lord, but he didn't understand him as the Supreme. So he didn't worship. Now here, Muchukunda is seeing, and he can see he's not anyone else within this universe, so he concludes he must be Lord Vishnu. But the point is, unless the Lord reveals, he can't actually know. Right? So therefore he asks him to please reveal who he is. But he says so out of politeness. So it's just, tell us about it. But if you can't do that, then this, at least tell us, kind of, so we can get some idea. Sri Muchukunda continued, as for ourselves, O tiger among men, we belong to a family of fallen Kshatriyas, descendants of King Ikshvaku. My name is Muchukunda, my lord, and I am the son of Yovanashva. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book. King Muchukunda thought it wise, however, to identify himself to the Lord first. Otherwise, he had no right to ask the Lord's identity, right? Because if he sees himself, this other person as someone very superior, and possibly the Lord himself, better than he talks about himself first, because always the junior is the one who reveals first. And then depending upon that, then the senior then interacts.
Etiquette
is such that a person of less importance cannot ask the identity of a person of higher importance without first disclosing his own identity. Footnote 8. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur points out that though Muchukunda had indicated his own position, he noted Krishna's silence. Therefore, he decided to introduce himself, noting his own good noting his own good qualifications, because Krishna didn't respond immediately. So then he did a further introduction. Srila Mukunda continued, "I was fatigued after remaining awake for a long time. My senses were overwhelmed by sleep. Thus I slept comfortably here in this solitary place until just now, someone woke me. Footnote 9. Srila Jiva Goswami remarks, "Having told his name and birth, he hides his inner feelings and tells of the external cause of his sleep and his actions. He does not mention the cause of his staying awake for so long out of humility." Right, so he doesn't say, because he was just, yeah, he just had a long sleep. But if he says, "Yeah, I was awake for, you know, one cycle of the four yugas fighting for the demigods, you know, they needed me, you know, cause, you know, they were all there doing their thing, but they couldn't quite take care of it, so they had to call me in, you know, so yeah, so I was awake. Did I mention I was awake? Did I mention it was four yugas? Yeah, so it was four yugas I was awake, and I was taking care and protecting the demigods." You know, then the Skanda guy came along, and then he said, "Okay, it's cool, he'll take care of it, you can go now, thank you for your service." Right? So he's not doing that. Yeah. Yeah. But he also only says the external. And that with, you know, with culture, tastefully. He doesn't mention the internal, that he was actually going to sleep to wait till Krishna came along. Because yeah, otherwise waiting that long would be too difficult, so he just went to sleep. Right? "The man who woke me was burnt to ashes by the reaction of his sins. Just then I saw you possessing a glorious appearance and the power to chastise your enemies. Your unbearably brilliant effulgence overwhelms our strength, and thus we cannot fix our gaze upon you. O exalted one, you are to be honored by all embodied beings." Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued, "Thus addressed by the King, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, origin of all creation, smiled and then replied to him in a voice as deep as the rumbling of clouds." So, you know, so deep is good. You know, that's always a respected. You know, it has that authority and all that. So you see, even like when they do, like, you know, narrations, documentaries and that, they're generally done with someone with a deep voice. It has it just has that effect. And the Supreme Lord said, "My dear friend, I have taken thousands of births, lived thousands of lives, and accepted thousands of names. In fact, my births, activities, and names are limitless, and thus I cannot count them. After many lifetimes, someone might count the dust of particles on the earth, but no one can ever finish counting my qualities, activities, names, and births." So that, you know, basically answers that question. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments, "Krishna thought, though Mukunda is completely without pride, he showed his position in order to hear my words. Therefore, I also, though completely without pride, will now pronounce my own superior position to him. I have said, accordingly, as they worship me, I also worship them." Considering this statement, Krishna then spoke. Right? So then he had said, you know, so in the same way then he reciprocated. Right? He dealt with Krishna by saying his position, so Krishna responded in the same thing. Because he didn't tell why he did it. Krishna doesn't tell why he either, right? The Supreme Lord continued, but it's all done with affection, so it's not that he's being cheeky here. So. The Supreme Lord continued, "O King, the greatest sages enumerated my births and activities, which take place throughout the three phases of time, but never do they reach the end of them. Nonetheless, O friend, I will tell you about my current birth, name, and activities. Kindly hear. Some time ago, Lord Brahma requested me to protect religious principles and destroy the demons who are burdening the earth. Thus I descended in the Yadu dynasty, in the home of Anaka Dundupi. Indeed, because I am the son of Vasudeva, people call me Vasudeva. I have killed Kalanemi, reborn as Kamsa, as well as Pralamba and other enemies of the pious. And now, O King, this barbarian has been burnt to ashes by your piercing glance. Since in the past you repeatedly prayed to me, I have personally come to this cave to show you mercy, for I am affectionately inclined to my devotees." Footnote 10. According to Srila Jiva Goswami, the Lord says, "I have not come here to kill Kaliyavana. That could have been done by other means. I came to give mercy to you." Means Krishna could have just sped up, and then a guy could have tripped on a rock or something, or didn't make it around the corner, and then found, you know, done the Wile E. Coyote one, you know. like that, but in any case, he arranged it like this so he could see Muchukunda. So he actually did this to meet Muchukunda, like that. Now choose some benediction from me, O saintly king. I will fulfill all your desires. One who has satisfied me need never again lament. The BBT purport states, the Acharyas explain that we lament when we feel incomplete, when we have lost something or when we fail to achieve something desirable. One who has satisfied Krishna and thus attained the Lord's mercy will never be troubled in these ways. Lord Krishna is the reservoir of all pleasure, and he enjoys sharing his spiritual bliss with all living beings. We need only cooperate with the Supreme Lord. So any way that we've lost something or failed to achieve something because we feel that there's an incompleteness, then that only comes up if one hasn't fully surrendered to the Lord. Right? If you fully surrender to the Lord, Krishna is satisfied with that, then that won't be there because you have Krishna. He is everything. So what's the gain? Right? Because other things is worth thinking, I'm here and I'll add this to me to make a completeness. But if you have Krishna, he being everything, what's else needs to be added? Right? There isn't something else. That's the benefit. But if you add these other things to yourself, it will never be enough, because even you add the whole world, it's still not enough. Right? Just like that one of the Indian kings before partition, then he had everything that you could get as a king. And he died of boredom. It's actually a condition. Like that. It's just he had no... Because he had everything still. And so he still didn't feel complete. Because it should be as you get all these things, you feel complete. But he didn't. So therefore, then, he died. Right? So it's not possible. But if you have Krishna, then you have everything. So then this won't come up anymore. That's why you're unaffected. We're thinking we're affected by... We're unaffected because there's nothing to gain, nothing to lose. Right? So one who is to satisfy Krishna and thus attain the Lord's mercy will never be troubled in these ways. Lord Krishna is the reservoir of all pleasure, and he enjoys sharing his spiritual bliss with all living beings. Right? So he's the unlimited ocean of pleasure. Therefore, in contact with him, one will share in that unlimited pleasure. We need only cooperate with the Supreme Lord. Sukadev Goswami continued. Muchukunda bowed down to the Lord when he heard this. Remembering the words of the sage Garga, he joyfully recognized Krishna to be the Supreme Lord Narayana. The king then addressed him as follows. Okay, verses 45 to 57. Muchukunda pleases Krishna by his prayers. Sri Muchukunda said, O Lord, the people of this world, both men and women, are bewildered by your illusory energy. Unaware of their real benefit, they do not worship you, but instead seek happiness by entangling themselves in family affairs, which are actually sources of misery. That person has an impure mind who, despite having somehow or other automatically attained the rare and highly evolved human form of life, does not worship your lotus feet. Like an animal that has fallen into a blind well, such a person has fallen into the darkness of a material home. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna. The example of a dark well is given because in the fields there are many wells, unused for years and covered over by grass, and poor animals, not knowing of them, fall into them, and unless rescued, they die. So that point of being rescued, they can be rescued. That's the whole point. So unless rescued, they'll die. So unless you come in contact with the bona fide devotees and spiritual master who's giving spiritual understanding, that's the only way out of the well. But if you don't come in contact, then it doesn't get any better. Being captivated by a few blades of grass, the animals fall into a dark well and meet death, right? Because they're looking, eating grass, and what's growing on the edge of the well will look very nice, right? Because it'll be big. It's not small, because no one goes there and eats, right? Because if they did, there'll be a gap there, and then you can look in and go, oh, okay. So they look good, so that the material world provides these things. It looks nice, but if you try to enjoy them, then you fall into the well. Similarly, foolish persons, without knowing the importance of the human form of life, spoil it simply for sense gratification and die without any useful purpose.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Śrīla Prabhupāda ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandi.